This is Sports Jam. I'm Doug Doyle, and today my guests are best of friends, and they're joining us from Florida. They both love the game of basketball, but both really spent long careers, too, in law enforcement and are famous for their work. But only one had a movie named after his alias and his career. First, Bob Starkman, who grew up in Queens, is a Hall of Fame junior college basketball coach and had an amazing career as a U.S. Customs street agent in New York City and Miami, and also spent time as a corrections officer and as a New York City deputy sheriff. Coach, great to have you on Sports Jam.
Same here. Thank you.
Sitting next to you is your good buddy Joe Pistone, New York Times bestselling author of Donnie Brasco. Joseph D. Pistone, also known by his undercover alias Donnie Brasco, is an American former FBI agent who worked undercover from 1975 to 1981 as part of an infiltration into two big-time mafia families in New York City. Pistone was an FBI agent for 27 years. He was portrayed by Johnny Depp in the 1997 film Donnie Brasco, also starring Al Pacino.
When I introduce you, I'm going to say, this is a friend of mine. That means you're connected, gang. Now, if I said instead, this is a friend of ours, that would mean you were made, gang. Capiche?
When Lefty brought Donnie into his world.
Who's this guy? This is Donnie, a friend of mine.
He took a risk on a kid he hardly knew.
I'm gonna have to school you, my friend.
School me in what?
Wise guy never carries his money in a wallet, see? Always in a roll. Bina, on the outside.
Joe, what an honor it is to have you on Sports Jam.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Joe wrote the foreword for Inside Both Courts, the new book from Bob Starkman. I have it right here. They sent me the book. Inside Both Courts is a gritty 40-year, no-holds-barred look from inside the world of college basketball and the people that Bob met along the way, the war on drugs, its successor, the war on terror, and how basketball and law enforcement guided him in his successful career, not only in law enforcement, but as a family man. It was a New York Daily News article about Detective Ralph Friedman that really whet your appetite, Bob, for a career in law enforcement.
That summer, some of our friends, I was still playing college basketball at the time and attending school. We used to rent summer homes out in the Hamptons, which I guess was the equivalent of Jersey Shore for you guys over there. And I remember getting up one Sunday morning and I was reading the New York Daily News and had the parade section, which was the color section, I believe they called it. And I remember pulling it out, you know, because the newspaper was like really thick on Sundays. And I saw this picture of a cop holding a suspect. And I started reading the article and it just kind of intrigued me. And I really didn't know what I wanted to do at the time. And I just read the article and just kind of got me going, taking police tests, me and a couple of my friends. It was just something that just caught my eye at the time.
The two of you, when you first met, you didn't necessarily have the best of words for each other. Joe, can you kind of relive that that meeting that you had?
Yeah, well, the Customs had an undercover school that I was a instructor at. And when I first met Bob, he said, you look bigger in your book. And I said, well, F you too, you know, and that was the start of a good friendship.
It's been a mutual respect thing between the two of you. I think you both have appreciated your careers, whether it be on the court and in law enforcement for Bob or for you, Joe. I know you've said, Bob, that Joe's career is just can't be matched when it comes to, you know, dealing with criminals and dealing with crime and dealing with the street and drugs and things like that. He's the marquee match.
He's the Michael Jordan of law enforcement, no question. And I don't think, you know, it's like breaking a record. You know, I don't think that record will ever be broken. And even steroids couldn't get it to be broken like in other sports, you know.
And you got to play a role in Donnie Brasco, the film that's all about Joe's life, starring Johnny Depp. And of course, what an amazing film that was. I just watched it again. And when it comes to that show, when you were watching it, Joe, obviously it's tough to see your own life on the screen, but were you happy with the end result?
Yes, I was happy with the end result. And you're right. You know, I don't think anybody thinks that they're ever going to have a movie made about one of their endeavors. And I was lucky enough to have one done. And when you first watched the movie, it was kind of tough watching it. But yes, I have to say that the screenwriters and everybody involved did a good job, because the movie was probably 85% true. And if you know anything about Hollywood, once you sign, you're lucky if they spell your name right the next time they see you or even acknowledge it. But I do want to make one observation for people that have saw the film, and those that hopefully are going to see the film, is that there's a scene in there where I slapped my wife. Believe me, that never happened in real life. That scene was put in by the director on the day. And what that means on the day is the day of filming, the director inserted that scene because it was not in the in the script. So for any ladies or females that see that movie or going to see it, I never slapped my wife.
You know, it's great that you mentioned that, because reading your book and reading the, reading Bob's book and knowing the relationship that you've had with your wife through all the years, and that you both as couples have got along for so many years, it didn't match. I said, boy, that's surprising that he would, you know, he would raise a hand to her. And obviously that had to tick you off a little bit, right?
Well, let me say this. It ticked me off a hell of a lot. And
what did Peggy think about it?
Well, luckily she wasn't there filming on the day, but she wasn't too happy when she saw the film. But I did hold up shooting of the film for a few hours with a, let's say, confrontation or verbal confrontation I had with the director.
I don't think you want to mess with Joe on the set here. Bob Starkman, you know, you had even a role in that movie. That had to be fun. It was minor, but it's still a role.
Yeah, it was great because just, you know, I went up to New York when they were filming. And, you know, a lot of friends, all my roots are still there. And I was able to bring my friends, you know, a lot of cops and guys I grew up with to the film set. And it was just pretty cool, you know, and I enjoyed. Then they filmed down in Florida with my, you know, cameo 30-second role. But just being part of it, it was fun, you know, and especially being close friends and family friends, it was enjoyable. And, you know, you talk about with the part with him slapping his wife. See, my wife sat with his wife at the premiere. So we got to hear all the comments, you know.
Oh, my.
It was good. And, you know, it was a great experience, you know, just like I said, just to be part of something.
Since we've already talked a little bit about Peggy, I want to talk a little bit about Jill, your wife, Bob. And you enjoyed Marv Albert's famous yes call that he would give during a Knicks broadcast. But there was another yes that was more important to you.
So that's when, you know, I guess I'm a really romantic guy. I finally got my first job and I decided, you know, I wanted to get married, and we were crossing the street in our neighborhood in Bayside on Springfield Boulevard. And, you know, guys do things crazy and different. I decided before we walked into the Big Apple supermarket, I said, oh, by the way, do you want to get married? And she said, yes. So that's something I haven't lived down either, just to let you know.
Yeah. But both of you have had long runs with your partners, and congrats on that. I know it's not easy. Inside Both Courts, why did you decide that you wanted to chronicle your long career in law enforcement and that transition that began with your daughter into coaching?
Well, you know, I in the book, I talk about how I always worked hard. I always wanted to make my high school team. And, you know, I didn't make it to my senior year. And I just kept on pushing. And, you know, originally I wanted to be a New York City cop. That was my dream. It never happened, although 3 days before I graduated the Customs Academy, I got called for NYPD. I remember being on the phone with my wife, and I just spent 3.5 months in, you know, Brunswick, Georgia. And I'm saying, nah, this is it. I stayed there. But I wanted to just kind of like give a story. And it's really not about me. I speak about everybody, you know, the teamwork and what got me to where I was able to be successful as a coach and in my law enforcement position. So the book is more of a, you know, like a life lesson. And I think our world needs things like that. It's not about you owe me. Everything I did, I earned. And, you know, and I think that's a reflection also on my own family with my three children. You know, they're all very successful, thank God. And it's just something I wanted to get out there. And I think it was a good time. And also showing, you know, how basketball, my upbringing, and law enforcement crossed, you know, each other's path. And I got to give credit to my middle son, Rob, who owns a big sock company, Rock'em Apparel. I had different names. One name was going to be Fed Up, like FedEx, Fed Up. You know, and I spoke with Joe. Joe is my, you know, my consultant, if that's the right word. And, you know, it's just too negative. Then the next one, I thought, you know what? Follow the bouncing badge. You know, basketball, the badge. Yeah. And then I was going to have one. It was just like the way it was, because times are different now than it was when all of us were working. And then finally, my son turns around and he goes, Inside Both Courts. I'm like, wow, that just hit it, like both courts. And man, I get more credit. Well, excuse me, I get more compliments, but I do give the credit to my son who gave me that name for the book.
Hmm. Speaking of giving names, Joe, obviously, a.k.a. Donnie Brasco, did you like that name, first of all? Was that okay with you? Did you pick it out? What happened with that?
Yeah, I picked it out. I just, you know, just a name that came to me, and it went along with my personality, and it stuck. And it's funny because I had used the name in a couple other undercover operations and prior to the 6-year one. And then after that, I changed it, my undercover name. I would, every other operation, I would use a different name. But that's the one that I used. I had done a year and a half before the 6-year one, and I used the same name in both undercover operations.
You mentioned the word personality. What is it about the guy next to you that you like? Let's first of all take him as a law enforcement officer. What was it about him? Because, you know, you were the top of your field at that time when he met you. You didn't necessarily have to deal with him at all if you didn't want to. What was it about Bob Starkman that you liked?
Well, what I liked about Bob was that he was straightforward. A no BS type of guy like I am. If he has something to say, he says it to you. He doesn't go behind your back and tell somebody else about a problem he has with you. And he's a stand-up guy, as they say on the streets and in law enforcement. Somebody that, if you need somebody to watch your six, that's the man you want behind you.
Bob, when you saw that movie, I would think you're just like everybody else. You're wondering, how is Joe still around? I mean, how did he get through all of this? Because there were a lot of people angry when, you know, the mob found out that he was an FBI agent.
Well, he hired a Jewish bodyguard, so that was his first positive thing, you know. No. And I'm also a lot bigger than him, even though he didn't like that when I first met him, you know.
And, well, I'm 6 foot. He's 6'5", so.
Yeah. I'm a big 6'5", you know. But, you know, I think what people don't realize, you know, it's like it's a job, you know, and just knowing, and I never really worked. Most of my work was narcotics, money laundering. I actually worked some terrorist stuff during 9/11 and after with the FBI task force as a customs agent. But, you know, again, I think it's like, you know, like sports, you know, like he did his job. You know what I mean? It's like you go out and you pitch a no hitter against a team, you know, hey, he did it. He beat us. Now, again, it's a different level, but, you know, I think that it's just, it's a respect level and it's your job. And, you know, just speaking to Joe, you know, it's something you do. Now, of course, you're always going to be, you know, the back of your head's always going to be moving. Like I said, I worked in a prison, and I tell people after you worked in the two jails I work in, very few things scare you. So I don't know what could scare him, but I know for myself, you know, you just, it's a job. And, you know, I don't think, probably knowing Joe, you don't look at it that way. You look at it, hey, I went out, you know, I did my job. It's like winning a ball game. You don't cheat, you know, you don't get hurt, you know, and it's like you arrest a guy. If he gets arrested and convicted, fine. If not, you're not going to lie in court. You're going to get him again. You know, it's kind of like a 7-game series.
From the New York Knicks, his sixth trip to the All-Star game, number 22, Dave DeBuscher.
Another thing you both have in common is the number 22 that you would like to either have on your uniform or watch. And that, of course, is the Knicks' great Dave DeBuscher, one of the top players in NBA history, led them to that with that great team with Frazier and Willis Reed and you can keep going on with all the names. And I used to play puff basketball, and I pretended, yes, I was Dave DeBuscher. Throw to Bradley, to Frazier.
Monroe, number 10, Frazier. 24, Bradley, cut across the top of the key, but Monroe gets the ball, gets to DeBuscher. DeBuscher misses, but is fouled on the play.
Back to try to get a shot underneath, and that's why he was fouled.
What was it about Dave DeBuscher for you that you idolized him, Bob?
Well, I like the fact, you know, again, 6'6 back then was considered big. I just like the way he played. He played hard, inside, outside. You know, basketball is a different game now. And, you know, even when I speak to my children and my players and my former players, they have no idea. You say Walt Frazier, you say Dave DeBuscher. But going to the number 22, how Joe and I, we were talking, we had a lot of stuff in common. You know, he played high school ball, played college ball. I played high school, I played college. He went to 4 schools, I went to 7 schools, you know. So, but we said, we were talking one day, and I said, yeah, what number 22? And he goes, that was my number. So it's just funny, but DeBuscher, he was just my idol. You know, in my back room, I have my autograph picture that my wife bought. And I'm still trying to figure out how it was, it was the certificate of authenticity when he was dead when she bought it. But I have my Dave DeBuscher. I have my high school jersey was 22. College, 1 year I wore 22 because back then they would give you the jerseys the size of yourself. And I was always pretty big. So I would get like 44 or 52. But 22 was really my number.
I never had the opportunity to interview Dave DeBuscher. Of course, I had Earl Monroe on the show and spoke a lot with Senator Bill Bradley at the time here in New Jersey. Joe, did playing basketball for you help you in law enforcement as well? Because it seemed to have just a great connection for Bob. Was it the same way for you? Was it the whole people, you learned respect, you learned how to play the right way? What was it about sports that helped your career?
Well, I think going along those lines, yeah, it teaches you discipline. Playing basketball is a team sport. Although, you know, one guy might be better than the other four guys on the court at the same time, he can't do it alone. So it is a team sport. And during the course of the game, you have to stay focused on the game. You have to stay focused on your opponent and on your own offensive schemes. And the same thing in law enforcement, you know, it's a team effort. And it's a profession where you have to stay focused. And you have to have mental toughness in both professions.
Coach, one thing that I really enjoy about the book is the fact that, you know, you're honest about your career. You talked about how you struggled as a young athlete and didn't make the team, as you mentioned, until your senior year. You got cut every year. You kept working on your game and got better. And really, your children got you introduced into the coaching aspect. I think that's wonderful that you started off in 1994 with a rec league for your daughter. And then suddenly you're answering a newspaper ad in the Sun Sentinel that's for an assistant women's basketball coach for Broward. And who knew that that would set off a Hall of Fame career as a coach?
Yeah, I remember it was a Sunday morning. I was eating my bagels and a friend of mine, Miles, calls me up. Miles Stone, an old friend and a former coworker. And he says, hey, I was just reading the employment section. Broward's hiring a women's coach. I honestly put in as a goof, you know, just to do it. It was a part-time position, and I got hired. So my first year, I was the assistant women's coach. Second year, assistant women's coach. Both coaches got fired. They made me the head women's coach. I did that for 2 years. And then one night, John Giordano, our athletic coordinator, calls me up to meet him at a gym. He says, I got good news and bad news. I said, yeah, might as well go with the bad news first. He says, you're not coaching the women's team anymore. Well, it's not so bad. What's the good news? You're coaching the men's team. So I took over a program that was 2-28. So first thing I did was I called the team together, got the kids, whoever there. Some kids didn't show up. And that was the last time they wore a Broward uniform. And I contacted, we didn't have a big budget. It was also, I was a part-time coach. And I contacted a lot of my friends in New York. They were coaching high school and just knew the game. And they all came through. I remember the first four games, we were 4-0. So I already, did well. I was able to get a kid that was a player of the year, Nate Daniels, junior college player of the year. I had Joe Marino. I had Adrian Jackson, a local kid. The list just went on. And we just kept on winning. And it was just, it was fun. Like, it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of struggles there because of being part-time, competing against schools where coaches are on campus all the time, where coaches are, you know, decent salary with a great budget. But I did it for the right reason. I love basketball. I love helping the kids. It's always great when I hear back from former players, which I'm constantly doing. Even last night on the way home from having dinner, my former player, Adrian Yudas, playing professionally, he's on his 15th year, called me from Israel. You know, and it's just like, that's right there, to me, no salary could really pay for that. And I was lucky I had a career that paid the bills.
You really had a number of players that, you know, have gone on to have quite a career. You have to be so proud of that. You also have dealt with a lot of criminals that are famous. Even the Amityville Horror guy was one of those that you dealt with. I think I wrote his name down here. Ronald DeFeo, I think, is his name, right?
He was one of the several celebrity inmates, as I referred to them, when I worked at Greenhaven. And then more so when I became a New York City correction officer, I was in charge of the special housing unit. So I had all the cop killers. Then upstairs, you had the celebrities and maybe some corrupt cops and all the others. And I mean, I went from Jack Abbott. He was the one that Norman Mailer wrote that book, The Belly of the Beast. I had James Dixon York and Anthony Labore. They were the two BLA cop killers that killed Richard. I think it was police officer Scarangelo. The list just went on. And, you know, it's funny because everywhere I go, I bump into somebody. And that was always my fear as a correctional officer. I'm not the easiest guy to forget. But, I mean, I was actually, there's a part near where I was in Midtown Manhattan and I bumped into a organized crime figure who knew me. And I had no problem when he came up and said hello to me. My wife thought she was going to get shot and, you know, and all that. Or the FBI was probably videotaping me talking to him. But I've always been a fair guy. You know what I mean? And you know, I'm a straight shooter. You know, I did my job. I did it the right way. And, you know, that's was part of the success.
We're talking with Joe Pistone here and Coach Bob Starkman on Sports Jam. Joe, when you were having that relationship with the character played by Al Pacino, it came across that he loved you.
Nobody can touch you because I represent you. Keep your nose clean, follow the rules, be a good earner, and maybe one day when they open the books, you become a wise guy. I die with you, darling.
I mean, you had really established a relationship. Was that love really there? How difficult is it to manage that? I mean, it became, I would imagine you became close to him.
Yes, that individual, Lefty, I did become close with. I was, the age difference was I could have been his son. And I think that's, you know, he saw in me somebody that had some common sense, some smarts. And I did become close with him, but I never went over that line that I wanted to rehabilitate him. That's not in my DNA. It's you're a gangster, you're a crook, you're a thief. I don't have any problem with that. You know, you are what you are because you chose to be that. I chose to be in law enforcement, and my job is investigate you, gather evidence, and if the evidence proves right, put you in jail. So although, you know, look, you spend 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year, 14, 15 hours a day with somebody, you have to have some kind of connection. But it strictly was that connection. I never thought about, you know, well, maybe I can rehabilitate him or help him along. That was his problem.
How difficult was it to stay away from your kids and your wife for that period of time? Peggy obviously has to be a special lady. And the kids, I'm sure, now understand what it was like.
Yeah, I mean, look, you're away for 7-8 months at a shot, you know, and then you get home for, you know, for 1 or 2 days. And, you know, your wife is raising the kids. So that was tough. That was the toughest part. And luckily, you know, she raised three good kids and no problems with any of them. And everything turned out well. Where in our profession, the divorce rate is very, very high. It takes a strong, you know, spouse or partner to do it, go at it alone. And I think as long as they know the reason that you're doing your job, That's, you know, that's 95% of it right there, is that they know you're doing your job because you believe in it and it's the right thing to do, not that you're running away from your responsibilities.
Life for Bob Starkman wasn't always rosy. You had a difficult, difficult time. You lost your mom at a very early age of 15. Just recently, you've lost two of your siblings. Can you talk about what everyone meant to you?
Well, you know, you're 15 years old and you lose a parent, you know, and it's like it either makes you or breaks you, you know, and I think it made me a stronger person. You know, my sister took a different path. My brother took a different path. And it's just something, you know, I had to adjust to, you know, and like I said, for me, I know it made me a stronger person. Yeah, it's almost a year ago that my younger brother passed away, which was a shock. It was very tough. My sister, she was sick, and she just passed away this October. So it's rough, you know. And I joke, I said, if I was Italian, I think they're coming to get me, you know, because they're losing everybody, you know. But, I remember my kids asked me, like one of them, like, you know, they kept on calling, are you okay? I've been through it at a young age. So I know how to deal with it. I think that's something that helped me, you know, mold who I am today, you know, whether it's maybe made me more of a person. I like to help people. You know, I see a lot of the kids I coach have come from, you know, just so many different backgrounds. I've had kids from Coney Island. I've had kids from Harlem. I had kids from Miami. I have kids from Serbia, you know, all over the world. And I just try to be a positive, you know, role to them and really help them. And I find so many kids call me that when I say problems, you know, we butted heads. And looking back, just thanking me. And to me, that's all worthwhile. And again, I look back as a kid and, you know, some people call it a struggle. I call it a life lesson. And that's the other reason I wanted to write my book. And again, anybody that read my book or will read it, it's not about me. It's about we. And I've always had that team concept. And I think that has helped me. It definitely has in both of my careers and more so in life.
At the head of each chapter, you have some quotes. Are you a sports junkie? Because a lot of them are the sports, you know, Mike Krzyzewski or Coach Bobby Knight. You've had several in there that you make mention of. DeBuscher, I think also you have in there quotes from them.
Coach Knight, I met a few times. Personally, he was recruiting one of my players, and that's actually, I became good friends with Chris Beard, who just took over Texas. But I, you know, thank God for Google. So, like, I look up, I like reading quotes. I like reading different things. I do that every day. And I just found, you know, for instance, you know, I don't know, even whatever the chapter, I try to have it relevant to the story. And even though I have a lot of pictures, each picture is related to one of my chapters. And the only thing you didn't notice here, I have very big font. That's for us older people. I got a lot of compliments on that. But, I like to, like I said, I read quotes a lot, something I've done for the last couple of years. And I always try to relate something to a quote, you know. It
works in this book. It really does. You do a nice job with that. I like how you describe a couple of your big moments as a player where you scored, I think it was 27, 29 points, and you were going up against one of the best players in the area. For you, Joe, now playing basketball too, do you have a special moment that you want to pass along to everybody and say, hey, you know, I was a hooper. I played college and I played high school. What moment do you remember the most?
I just think I remember I started varsity as a freshman in high school, which is, you know, in Patterson, which is pretty good. Played on some championship teams.
Listen to him just throw that out there, Bob. I played on some championship teams. I was starting as a freshman.
He's very low-key, you know.
You were good. You were good.
Played with some good teammates, you know, and was lucky that played under, you know, one of the best high school coaches come out of Jersey, Mickey Spinelli, and just lucky to be in the environment surrounded by good ball players.
Did you ever want to be a coach?
No, I always kid Bob. I coached 1 year in the Jewish league, and the team had, I think they had won maybe one or two games the year before, and actually my basketball coach, Mickey Spinelli, said, hey, there's a job opening at the Jewish Y. And these were high school kids that didn't make the high school team. He said, why don't you take it? I can get you the job. I said, okay. So I took it, and I think I was still probably a senior in college. And I took it, and we actually won the Jewish League in the, you know, of all the Jewish YMHAs in the area. I think we had maybe one loss. And, but then after that, no, I always wanted to be in law enforcement. I always wanted to be like Bob. I always wanted to be a cop or some type of law enforcement.
It would be remiss if I didn't say thank you to both of you for your service in law enforcement and your great careers. Also, when you take a look back at coaching, I have a funny moment that, Bob, you may appreciate. When I coached freshman basketball at Rumson-Fairhaven High School, we went up against a team that we had never beaten. And I said, well, what would it take for you guys to win tomorrow? And I came from Western Pennsylvania. We were pretty much hard-nosed. We'd run a lot. You know, when I got their practices, they said, hey, coach, your practices are too long for our kids. Forget it. You need to chop them down, right? So I knew what I was up against. But I said, what would it take? And I looked at the Brill cream, to date myself here, on the sink in the locker room. And I said, if I slicked my hair back like Pat Riley for the varsity game, if we beat this team, would you go out and try to win? And they were like, you know, pounding lockers didn't work with these guys, right? Sprints didn't work. Do you know they went out and won? Because they wanted to see me. And the athletic director of the varsity game goes, what is up with your dude tonight, Doug? And I said, hey, whatever works, coach, that's what you got to do, right? So that connection that you have with kids and how it started with your children and whatnot, that was something that, was it always inside you, or was that a learned experience?
Well, I never thought in a million years I'd be a coach, in a million years. And it just that I started enjoying it because, you know, there's a lot of obsessed parents out there. I never had to live my life to my children. My daughter was a great high school player. She started every game, like Joe, from freshman to a senior year. She played at Belmont Abbey College. It's funny, my middle child, Rob, he's 6'10". People would come up to me and say, how come you don't make your son play? He's 6'10". You're a coach. I go, I don't have to live my life through my children. He also, like I said, he owns a sock company now. That, trust me, he wouldn't be making that money if he was playing basketball. My little son was a baseball player, got hurt, was a manager for years, as my other son was at UCF, but my youngest son was the manager at the University of Florida, and he's in his sixth season with the NBA working for a team. So it's just interesting how everything revolves, you know? And, you know, the one thing I forgot, that we were talking about the book, just getting off key a little, throughout my whole process of writing the book, Joe was the only guy that, or person, that actually looked at what I was doing. So I would write things down. Joe would look at it. You know, he would always tell me, don't take this personal. I said, no, not at all. And, you know, fix this, get rid of this, too much of that, too little of that. And this went on, you know, in paragraphs. I mean, pages we did, right? The whole book. And then since I'm not a good typist, when I first started the book 13 years ago, you know, it's like I'm doing a one finger crossover. Then if I made a mistake, I'd hit shift, alt, delete, and I'd lose everything. So Joe said, go old school, pad and paper, start writing things down. So if I spelt your name wrong, I erase it, cross it out. One of my former players was playing professional basketball, in Spain, Joe Lopez. I would scan it, send it to him in, you know, Spain, send it back to me. Then I hired a lady to do my, just to do the editing. You know, just that. And I laugh, you know, the book was completed. I said, I couldn't even write a term paper in college, and I wrote a 400-page book. It's like, something's wrong with that picture.
You have some memory, I tell you. You can go back and remember a lot of things. And Joseph D. Pistone is also known as the New York Times bestselling author of Donnie Brasco, his life story. So he would know to take a look. And you've also dealt with a lot of movie people, too, and actors, Joe. Who would play Bob Starkman, the movie?
Well, somebody suggested Vince Vaughn, and the more I thought about it, I think it would be a pretty good choice because he's a big guy. He's like 6'5", 6'6", and to me, I think he's a really good actor. And when these people suggested it, after thinking about it, I thought it would be a good choice.
Sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Now, Joe, do you feel like there's still a bounty over your head or no?
Well, I don't think anybody's getting up every morning saying, you know, we're going out looking for Joe. And, you know, in our situations, what you worry about is what we call like a cowboy, you know, somebody that thinks, hey, if I, you know, if I get to knock off Donnie Brasco or Bob Starkman or somebody, you know, it's going to put a feather in my cap. But the real legitimate gangsters right now, I don't think the legitimate gang, you know, that's a funny term, right? Legitimate gangster. I don't think that that they're worried anymore, and that they want any of the heat, you know, brought down on.
Any regrets for you?
Well, you know, that I spent so much time away from my family, you know, and sometimes I think, well, you know, I probably could have put more people in jail, you know, but
you put enough.
Yeah, but I think that most of it is the time with the kids growing up, missing birthdays, communions, confirmations, and events like that, birthdays, yeah.
What's your favorite part of Inside Both Courts?
Mine are the sales, but hopefully this will be
fun. What's your favorite, Joe?
I think that, you know, the whole book. I mean, it was like just the way Bob interwoven his life experiences outside of basketball with law enforcement growing up and what he instilled into his ball player. I know when I would come and visit him, as I'm doing now, and I'd generally make it during the basketball season so I can go to his games, and just to see the way he coached up the kids. And even today, I mean, it's amazing how many of his former players call him and stay in touch with him. I mean, and how many of his former players are playing, you know, professional overseas and call him from overseas at least once a week to stay in touch with him. And that's, like I say, that comes from his, you know, his experiences growing up, being a customs agent and being a coach, and how he intertwined and interwoven all of those into this book.
Before we let you guys go, we got to mention that that resume for Coach Bob Starkman includes assistant basketball coach at FNU. It also includes Kaiser University, Broward College that we talked about, and many rec leagues and many other types of leagues that he's been coaching, and is a JUCO Hall of Fame coach. And when you look back at this career, something happened recently, Bob, that players will never forget, both high school and college players, and that is COVID. And it impacted the West Palm Beach sports schedule. In fact, I give the reports for West Palm Beach on a couple of the radio stations there in Florida, the high school sports. And so I know they've been impacted greatly. You've had some conversations, I imagine, that meant a lot to the players because, hey, they might not be able to go to that big university because their senior year wasn't as good, or maybe they got shortchanged in high school.
Well, I volunteered. There's a program down here, South Florida Elite, run by Lou Vivas. I volunteered to coach an unsigned senior team. And what I'm doing, the kids that haven't signed, and doing a couple tournaments, and just trying to help them out, you know. And I try to explain to these kids I'm going to coach them the same way I coach in college. And that if, you know, I could help you, but you got to want to help yourself. So that's my way of trying to giving back. And it's been a tough year, and recruiting is very tough because kids have gotten back an extra year, even in junior college. So, you know, if you're a sophomore and you could have moved on, they could stay basically for a third year. At the NCAA and NAIA level, it's the same thing. You know, a senior could come back. So I just want to be able to help somebody, you know, the kids that really need the help. And that's one of the things I'm doing right now.
So last question, you both are tough guys. You both, been, you know, had an amazing career in law enforcement. Do you challenge each other in any sport, whether it be basketball, card playing? Do you get that competitive juice going between the two of you?
Only with cooking. He has taught me all. I'm the only Jewish guy that got all these mob recipes. And then, so he's got me going with that. So, you know, I have to take pictures. We're like two nerds, but we don't put it on social media. Hey, Joe, look at this. But I got to tell you a story. My son-in-law, Chuck, always told me to get an air fryer. Now, he's a combat vet with the 101st Airborne. He's a cop. And he says, so him and my daughter bought me a air fryer for Christmas. And he said to me, there's some that have an air fryer and there's those that don't. You now have one. So Joe makes fun of me for having an air fryer. So his birthday recently, I went to Costco, and guess what I bought him? An air fryer. But right around then, he was like, yeah, laughing at me. So him and his wife came over for dinner, and I cooked some Italian food, and he thought the bread was the best. That I made some, what do you think I cooked it? In the air fryer. Ask Joe what he's using now. So we compete in that, you know? He's trying to make pastrami sandwiches, and I'm trying to make pasta.
What he neglected to tell you is that I coached him up. I coached him up on cooking Italian.
He has.
And for a year, he'd call me and I'd be at, you know, I'd be at my house in New Jersey and he'd say, how do I make such and such? So I'm going to tell you, but then I'll email you the recipe. So I would. And then he'd send me a picture of his meal. And, I'd ask Jill, how was it, Jill? She said, man, that's delicious. So I made him Italian cook for a year. And I said, Bob, no self-respected Italian guy cooks in an air fryer. So.
But I only cooked the bread. That part he didn't tell you.
If you guys go out to a really nice Italian restaurant, what are you ordering, Joe?
Oh, you know, it all depends.
Whatever I'm paying for.
It all depends on the rest. I usually just get a piece of fish. I get a nice piece of fish and maybe a side of pasta. Yeah. I'm a big fish guy. I love fish.
Well, whatever you say seems to have worked for you through your career. Congratulations on an unbelievable career, Joe Pistone.
Thank you very much.
Not only for your, your book, Donnie Brasco, this is, you know, Inside Both Courts, but Donnie Brasco right there, and the movie that really shows, you know, what you've done for this country, you know, and how you've been able to work hard in law enforcement. And the same thing for you, Bob Starkman, in your book, Inside Both Courts. And Joe wrote the foreword to this book. And yeah, as you mentioned, he was your leader through this whole thing. So congratulations to both. Really enjoyed it. I advise anyone to go Amazon, right, is where you can find it?
All the books, yeah, Joe's, as well as his 8 books. I got 7 more to catch up that I know about.
Nice run. That's all you have to do is put in Joe Pistone and Bob Starkman, and you're all set on Amazon. So, hey, thanks to both of you. It was a lot of fun, and we really appreciate you being on Sports Gen.
Same here. Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Have a great weekend.
Anything better than a beautiful theme song to a terrific movie, the 1997 film Donnie Brasco. Sports Jam is a WBGO News production. You can check out all the podcasts by going to wbgo.org/sportsjam or find Sports Jam with Doug Doyle on the NPR list of podcasts and on iTunes. Until our next Sports Jam session, I hope to see you at the game.